Chapter 20. Demon Host. Ashes to Ashes. Dark Prince.
I'm going to kill you all. You know that, yes?
The thing bound in the upright metal cage spoke with Lemuel's voice, but Trier knew it wasn't him. It sounded like someone copying his voice after hearing a distorted vox capture. Its voice was a poor copy, but it was the eyes that revealed the greatest difference. Until they had soured in Committee Sona, Lemuel's eyes had always been a honeyed brown, kind and filled with welcome. Now they were cruel and soulless, devoid of humanity. Lady Valeda had explained what had happened to Lemuel, but the idea that a portion of the Primarch she had once loved now resided within him was too much to take. It was Lemuel's flesh, mahogany brown skin layered over muscle and bone, but the will animating it was utterly inhuman. The locked gibbet held it rigid and unmoving, like a soldier standing to attention, but Chaya felt the tension vibrating just below the surface. Lemuel shimmered as though a heart of molten light burned at his core. Writhing veins strained against his skin, as if under tremendous pressure from within.
"But I'm going to start with you,"
said Lemuel, his black eyes fixed on Lady Valeda as she arranged herself on a mat placed by Jambik Sosruko.
"I'll pull your spine out by the root and use that deformed skull of yours as a mace."
The diminutive woman chuckled, a throaty rasp of amusement, and indicated the hulking shapes behind them.
"I think Jambik Sosruko have something to say about that," she said. "He do good job of ripping your head off neck."
Chaya turned and looked up into the broad, flattened features of Lady Valeda's constant protector. The huge Migu wore armour formed of banded torques and a heavy carapace of moulded bronze, shawled with a cloak of reeking fur. The creature could be a cousin of the two legionaries flanking it. One a flame-haired warrior armed with a long-hafted spear with a serrated blade, the other a chimeric giant of metal, meat and warplate. Like Chaya and Lady Valeda, the three warriors wore humming mechanicum's signum seals that would mark them as friendlies to the sentry guns stationed around the deck.
"That aberrant freak of genetics, please."
"If not him, then Hellblind and Rack will finish job," said Lady Valeda,
lifting a rolled leaf cheroot and a single match from a small table the Migu placed next to her, with a delicacy of touch that belied his brutish scale. A deck of cards sat at the edge of the table, next to what looked like a muslin-draped tea set of cups, pots, and a ceramic jar. Lady Valeda scratched the match to life with her thumbnail and lit the end of her cheroot. She inhaled deeply and blew a cloud of blue smoke towards Lemuel. Trier coughed at the foul reek of toxins, but at least it masked the stale oil stink of their protectors.
"Russ's dogs couldn't finish the job on Prospero. What makes you think they can do it here?"
Chaya flinched at the naming of her raised homeworld, the loss and open wound in her heart that would never heal. She squeezed her eyes closed, bunching her hands into fists. Lady Valeda had warned her not to show any emotion before the thing wearing Lemuel's flesh. It would scent any weakness like a psychnuon drawn to an unguarded mind. Lady Valeda took another hit from her cheroot.
"Because they do it right now, if I ask. They want to kill you. Very much they do. Lost many brothers on Prospero. Killing you make them very happy, I think."
She turned.
"You be happy to kill Magnus?"
"Happy as a hunter knee-deep in Jungunar blood," said Hellblind, scraping his frosted axe along the side edge of his crux shield.
"And you, Svavnir Rackwolf?"
The giant warrior wrapped the haft of his barbed spear on the deck and nodded.
"Very happy," he said. "Give the word and my spear will cleave his heart."
Lady Valeda grinned and said,
"You see, you live or die on word I give, or not. Your choice."
"So why haven't you given that word?"
said Lemuel with a grin that stretched so wide it split the skin at the corners of his mouth. Runnels of blood dripped down his chin.
"If everyone aboard this ship wants me dead, yet I still draw breath. I have to imagine I have something you want, yes? Now, what might that be?"
You know what I want, said Lady Valeda.
You want to know where the other shards of my soul are?
Yes. You want to tell me?
No.
Why not?
If you were chained in the deepest jail and only recently gained your freedom, would you let someone put you back?
You were chained?
Asked Lady Valeda.
Of course. Who recounts tales of Magnus the Warrior?
Snarled Lemuel.
Who remembers the great duels he fought, the mighty foes he slew? Who speaks of him in the same breath as Angron or the Lion when they tell of the martial prowess of the Primarchs?
No one,
said Lady Valeda.
So why would I tell you anything?
Need not us, looking to put your soul back together.
No. You just want to destroy it.
You'd rather be nothing than put back in chains, I think.
Lemuel did not answer, and Lady Valeda sighed.
Suit yourself,
she said, lifting the cards from the table and spreading them face down before her.
We do this hard way.
Cartomancy,
chuckled Lemuel, glaring with contempt at the worn deck.
What have you come to when you must use such black deceits to find your way?
My cards, not ordinary cards,
said Lady Valeda, turning them over at random.
They hear all. Know all. Don't believe me? Speak, and I tell what truth they hear.
Chaya saw each of the revealed cards had turned edges and were faded with strange designs, cups, wands, and other more esoteric symbols. She saw toppling stone towers, great warriors, and all manner of unfamiliar beasts.
That deck will tell you nothing, said Lemuel. Ahriman had a deck just like that, for all the good it did him. Attila was a fraud. Then your cards are copies of a fake.
Lady Valeda blew out a series of perfect smoke rings.
Think you so? Cards led us to you on Mountain.
Because I let them, said Lemuel. You think I wanted to remain trapped upon a ruined gateway to Idinu?
Maybe. Maybe not. But cards listen to body you stuck in. And here we are. Who knows what they hear now, eh?
Chaya listened to Lady Valeda and Lemuel speak as if they were merchants haggling over the price of fish. She sensed a battle being played out behind their every utterance, but had not the clarity of thought to understand it. Lady Valeda turned her cards and placed those she didn't want back in the deck. She turned over a card showing a lightning-struck tower with a skeletal reaper falling from its battlements.
Too obvious,
she said, and replaced it in the deck. Chaya kept her gaze fixed on Lady Valeda as she worked her way through the cards.
Look at me, Chaya, said Lemuel.
Her gut knotted in terror, and she felt her heart pounding within her chest. She shook her head.
No. Why not?
I don't know you, she said.
Of course you do. Look at me.
You can look, Prospero's daughter,
said Lady Valeda, resting a tiny hand on Chaya's forearm as she dealt another card.
Magnus thing not harm you. Caesarea say Rackwolf's rune strong.
I don't want to look,
said Chaya, biting her bottom lip in terror.
After what Lem did, I can't look at him. I just can't, I'm sorry.
Come now, girl,
said the thing wearing Lemuel's face, sounding almost disappointed.
You'd be dead, or worse, if not for Lemuel. The cannibal corpse things of Committee Sona would have gnawed your eyes out and licked the inside of your skull clean if he hadn't nudged that mother into doing what she'd secretly always wanted to do.
The monsters would have flayed you alive and worn your skin as you watched Camille die. Are you telling me that's what you'd rather have happened?
Reluctantly, Chaya raised her head and swallowed hard.
No,
she said softly, finally meeting Lemuel's gaze.
No,
agreed the black-eyed monster.
He saved that boy years of misery and pain. Saved his mother the burden of caring for the mewling little wretch after he ruined her life by being born. Poor little Chaya. You get to live, and all it cost was the life of a worthless brat she hated anyway. Sounds like you got a good deal, girl.
I didn't hate that boy.
Don't lie,
said Lemuel, with a gurgling chuckle that made her want to vomit.
Go on telling yourself you didn't. But I know everything Lemuel knows, all the things you told him when Camille wasn't around. You hated that child for crying every night, for spoiling the little fantasies of better lives and better places you clung to. You hated him for reminding you every moment of every day that you were trapped in a nightmare of your own making.
No, I didn't,
said Chaya, tears flowing down her cheeks.
Liar! Yes!
Screamed Chaya.
Yes, I hated him, but I didn't want him dead.
Lemuel laughed and said,
I know you did. Lemuel felt the relief filling you when the monsters went away. He felt it the moment you knew the boy was dead. And he felt how relieved you were that it wasn't you. Well, there's no shame in that. It's the survival instinct bred into mortals even before you were knuckle-dragging primates. And anyway, haven't we all wanted to kill someone at some point?
No, never.
But you want to kill me, yes?
Chaya sat silently.
Yes,
she finally whispered.
What did you say?
I said yes! I wish you were dead for what you did. I wish you had died when the wolves first took us. I wish it had been you instead of that boy. I wish you were dead, you bastard!
Lemuel's laughter echoed from the walls of the deck as Chaya launched herself from her stool towards Lemuel. She had barely taken her first step when a meaty hand closed around her wrist like a vice. Jambik Sazruko held her fast and shook his head.
Step back, he said. Now.
Let me go, damn you!
Step back now.
Do as he say,
said Lady Valeda, without looking up from her cards.
Be very bad to break circle Rackwolf carved. Be very bad indeed. Magnus wants you to break it. Maybe he can get out then. I not want that. You don't either, I think.
Chaya looked down and saw her left foot was a finger's breadth from crossing the outermost line of Rackwolf's runic carvings.
Maybe you sit down, yes,
said Lady Valeda, tapping ash from her cheroot onto the deck.
You not talk now, okay?
Chaya nodded and pulled back from the circle, lowering herself gingerly to her seat.
You used your powers to force a mother to murder her child, she said. What kind of person does that?
A person who wanted to live,
said Lemuel, trying and failing to shrug in his gibbet.
You not talk, I said,
snapped Lady Valeda.
Sit. Jambik Sazruko will pour us drink from Nagasena's special pot. It fresh brew I make to calm nerves. Maybe need some now?
Yes,
said Chaya, letting out a long, tension-filled breath and sinking down onto her stool as the Migu lifted the muslin cloth from the tea set. The painted ceramic pot and cups were exquisitely made, ringed with heroic tales rendered in thin lines of pale blue around their circumference. They were the most beautiful things she had ever seen. Chaya's eyes narrowed as the Migu lifted something pale in ceramic that had been obscured by the cloth. Something familiar, yet out of place.
What's that doing here?
She said. Nagasena saw it in the same instant. His eyes widened and his hand flew to the hilt of Iosian.
Yasu, what is it? Asked Promus. Get them out of there,
said Nagasena, turning towards the control room's exit.
Right now! What's wrong?
Demanded Biaki.
What do you see?
Thrawn, how could I have missed it?
Said Nagasena, running for the door.
Missed what?
Nagasena paused and half drew his sword.
We don't have one soul shard aboard the Arethusa,
he said.
We have two!
Jambik Sosruko lifted the pale urn that held the ashes of Callista Eris from Lady Valeda's table. It looked absurdly small in his giant hands, but he held it as delicately as Lemuel had ever since Callista's death. Chaya hadn't noticed it on the table, arranged as it was among the other pots.
Jambik,
said Lady Valeda.
What you doing?
The Migu looked bewildered to be holding the urn. its heavy brow furrowed and its eyes screwed up in concentration. The synaptic crown buzzed with static. His giant head cocked to one side and he nodded slowly. Then he smashed the urn with a boulder-like fist. Chaya's hands flew to her mouth in shock. A swirling cloud of glittering dust enveloped Jambik Sosruku. It sparkled like diamond dust in starlight, lingering in the air and coiling about him like a sentient fog. The Migu's back arched, and it let out a cry of pain as the glittering dust poured itself into him, filling his body with light. Arcs of fire streamed into his eyes and mouth. His whole body seethed as the soul shard hidden within the urn bonded with a living host.
Maleficarum!
Yelled Svavnir Rackwolf, leaping forwards with his spear extended. He rammed it into the Migu's belly, but the weapon's haft bent as reinforced plate and slabbed muscles kept its tip from penetrating. Sosruko backhanded the spear aside and pistoned his leg out to hurl Rackwolf across the deck. With a howling roar, Gyalothnir Hellblind closed and battered his crux shield against Jambik Sosruko's arm. The limb went wide. The wolf pressed inwards, going low. His axe came around hard and fast. It bit thigh meat, and the Migu grunted in pain. Chaya cried out in fear as Hellblind wrenched his blade free in a welter of blood. Jambik Sosruko lashed out at his attacker, but Hellblind was already moving. He rolled around behind his foe. Sosruko made a quarter turn to face him. Chaya scrambled away from the roaring combatants on her haunches, gagging on the bitter taste of blood. The urge to flee, to escape this violence, flooded her limbs with adrenaline. Svavnir Rackwolf threw himself back into the fray, his spear held low like a plains hunter facing a leviathan. He yelled a Fenrisian oath before thrusting his weapon up into the fleshy gap at Sosruko's armpit. The barbed tip plunged into the Migu's body. Rackwolf churned the blade like a lever, and Sosruko bellowed in agony.
"Stop foolishness now!"
shouted Lady Valeda, tiny before the vast bulk of her son. The Migu paused at the sound of her voice. Did a shred of its crushed psyche remember her? Hellblind took advantage of the creature's distraction and hammered his axe against the side of its knee. Chaya heard the sickening sound of shattering bone. Still, the Migu did not go down, its nervous system too blunt and rudimentary to acknowledge an injury that should have crippled it. Rackwolf ripped his spear from Jambik Sosruko's body, tearing tendons, shredding muscle and bone as the angled barbs wreaked irreparable damage. Gyalothnir Hellblind rapidly sidestepped around to the Migu's rear, and Chaya yelled a warning as he crossed the rune-carved circle.
Stop! You're...
Her words were drowned out as Lemuel bellowed from his gibbet cage, and Chaya's prosperine senses, even dulled as they were, felt a surge in ether energy.
"Kill the dwarf, bitch!"
roared Lemuel. Jambik Sosruko turned and lumbered towards Lady Valeda. Hellblind and Rackwolf pressed the advantage, their weapons cutting deep into Sosruko's body as he gave up on defending himself. None of his many mortal wounds were slowing him.
"Told you stop!"
said Lady Valeda, planting herself before Jambik Sosruko and holding a stern hand up before her. Chaya saw she held a card in her other hand, but its face was turned from her. The Migu towered over her, and Chaya saw nothing in its eyes that spoke of any love for the woman before it. Jambik Sosruko snatched Lady Valeda from the ground as easily as a child might lift its favourite toy. Rackwolf's spear tip exploded from the Migu's belly. A jet of blood sprayed, and where it landed, inside the runic circle, it hissed as though the deck were a heated skillet.
"Put me down!"
said Lady Valeda. Sosruko howled as the wolves hacked him to pieces. He gave one last roar and swung Lady Valeda like a club. Her body smashed against Lemuel's gibbet cage, every bone shattering like glass.
"No!"
screamed Chaya. Lady Valeda fell in a limp, broken heap at the foot of the buckled metal of the cage. Chaya crawled towards her, knowing she could not help her, but unwilling not to at least try. Smoke rose from the woman's skin, and her eyes were wide with shock and disbelief. Amazingly, she yet lived, holding out the blood-stained card towards Chaya.
"Daughter of Prospero,"
said Lady Valeda, imploring with the last of her strength.
"Look, understand."
She saw the image on the card, but had no knowledge of what it represented. She imprinted it on her mind's eye as it burst into flames and fell to ashes. Rackwolf and Helblein stood over the fallen body of Jambik Sosruka. Trya closed her eyes and wept, pressing her hands over her ears to block out the wet thuds of blades in flesh. She heard metal twist and snap, blaring klaxons, emergency beacons spun up to bathe the embarkation deck in flashing amber light. Trya cried out as a surging fire washed over her, a fire that burned colder than anything she had ever known. She let out a misted breath and looked up through tears of grief and pain to see the torn and bloodied metal of the gibbet cage hanging open. She heard a roar of agony and rolled onto her side. Trya opened her eyes, but what she saw made no sense. Svavnir Rackwolf was down on his knees, his armor molten and cherry red. He howled, the flesh on one half of his face bubbling and running like wax. Lemuel was holding Gyr Lofnir Hellblind aloft, bearing the giant wolf's weight without effort, his right hand buried deep in the warrior's armored chest. The cloud of light that had taken Jambik Sosruko now abandoned the Migu's corpse, billowing upwards like golden fire and pouring into Lemuel. The former Remembrancer's flesh bulged and rippled at the reunion of the two soul shards. He unleashed his newfound power into the warrior of Fenris, searing the wolf to ash and fire within his warplate. Gyrloth near Hellblind loosed one last defiant howl before the ether fire consumed him. Lemuel dropped the blackened shell of Hellblind's armor. It came apart in a clatter of smoking debris, dust pouring from its joints and neck. Lemuel turned towards her, and the searing core of doomed suns burned in his eyes. So bright, it seemed they merged into one singular orb.
"I told you I would kill you all," said Lemuel.
Nagasena vaulted the railing and dropped to the deck in a crouch. He already knew he would be too late. The Remembrancer towered over the Prosperine woman, his body seething with power. Lady Valeda and the two wolves lay broken at his feet, and it seemed to Nagasena that two stuttering images flickered in the space occupied by one body. Aeotian whispered fully from its sheath, the words of Ultramar glittering along its length. He heard Biarki moving down the railings behind him, dropping with the grace of a hunting leopard. Wailing sirens filled the deck with noise, and Nagasena hoped Diopromus wasn't about to vent the entire deck to the void. Nagasena had given him that option, but was betting he would hold off making such a hard call until the very last instant.
"Go left!"
roared Biarki, swiftly overtaking Nagasena. He nodded as he ran, and widened the gap between himself and the rune priest. Despite the enormous bulk of his armor, Biarki was easily outpacing him. The deck was not large, and Nagasena's pace slowed as the conjoined soul shards of Magnus turned Lemuel's gaze upon them. The Remembrancer's face was stretched wide in a rictus mask, the inhuman power filling him too much to bear. Even Biarki's step faltered as the power within Lemuel took notice of him. Nagasena turned as he heard the blast doors on his right opening. The newly transplanted machine soul of Magos Araxi stomped in, bearing a heavy adamantium pole topped with a serrated capture collar fashioned from null metals. Olgir Widdowson ran in after him, followed by the limping figure of Sister Caesaria. The pariah sister bore her many hurts stoically. She had refused all pain balms for fear it would blunt her powers to quell the tides of the Immaterium.
"We barely captured Magnus before. How can we hope to contain him now? His power has doubled."
But there would be no more bloodshed here. Lemuel carefully dropped to his knees and laced his hands behind his head.
"I will not fight you," he said. "I surrender."
"Surrender!"
roared Biarki, spinning his frost blade around until its tip was aimed squarely at Lemuel's heart.
"You slay two of my men, and you think you can surrender?"
"I only killed one,"
said Lemuel, nodding to the groaning Svavnir Rackwolf.
"That one is still alive, but he won't be for long if you don't get him to a Medicaid."
"Bodva!"
said Nagasena, seeing the urge to strike Lemuel down in Biarki's features. The savage heart of Fenris was to the fore, but the greater strength of nobility won out.
"The one you feed,"
said Biarki through clenched teeth.
"What?"
said Lemuel.
"Do not talk to it,"
said Sister Caesarea. Bjarki flinched at her words, and Nagasena saw his top lip curl in distaste at her abrasive, sigh-dampening powers. The mere proximity of one of the Null Sisters was enough to curb the most powerful psychers. But would it be enough to contain the power of a Primarch?
Lemuel groaned, and the diffuse light seeping from his skin dimmed as Magus Araxi moved behind him.
The capture collar snapped shut around Lemuel's neck, and he grimaced as the piston limbs of the Magus yanked him to his feet with enough force to draw blood. Olgia Widdowson skidded to a halt beside Svavnir Rackwolf, and together with his long spear lifted him into his arms. The fallen wolf's features were in ruins, scorched and dripping from his bones in fatty runnels. Without a word spoken, Widdowson bore his wounded brother away.
"We should kill this thing," said Caesarea.
"I do not know if such a thing is even possible," said Nagasena.
"I can try to find out," replied Bjarki.
"Kill him,"
said Chaya, weeping as she cradled the shattered form of Lady Valeda in her arms.
"Kill him for all he's done, for all he's brought down upon us."
"Never thought I'd agree with a child of Prospero," said Bjarki.
"No,"
said Nagasena, holding up a hand and sinking to one knee. He played out the last moments of the slaughter he'd witnessed from the control room, following the spread of ancient cards lying in a hooked pattern around the fallen seer. Nagasena felt as though he ought to be seeing some significance in the play of the cards and their relationships to one another, but he had no sensitivity for such things. Despite that, he remembered exactly how they had fallen, and how Lady Valeda had held one just before she died. Nagasena looked up from the cards and said to Chaya,
"You saw something, didn't you? What did Lady Valeda's cards hear?"
Looking around the sepulchral bridge of the Osiris Panthea, Hathor Mart could clearly see the psychic toll the black ship was exacting on its new crew. None of the Thousand Suns had rested since seizing the vessel from Committee Sona, and every one of them was paying a heavy price for that. Their nightmares were too vivid and too anguished for any of them to risk sleep, and their waking moments were little better. The most powerful among them felt the black ship's grating suppression the most. Ignis roamed the command deck like a madman, picking at his scabs, repeating endless number sequences of arcane significance and scratching furiously on a broken data slate. Tolbeck sat with his head in his hands on a crew bench at the edge of the bridge, staring vacantly ahead. The Pyrrhi's ascendancy was waning, and the tempestuous adept's mind had turned inwards at the loss of his fellowship's primacy. Ahriman was likely up in the Ocularis chamber, staring into the great ocean in search of guidance and blindly trusting that the shard of their genesire within his staff was guiding them true. Sanact, poor, loyal Sanact, sat alone beneath the lectern bearing the Book of Magnus, an obedient hound awaiting its master's voice. He obsessively polished and sharpened sword blades that could gleam no brighter nor hold a keener edge. Chained at the foot of the lectern, Camille Shivani trembled in the cold of the bridge, her breath misting as she knotted the thin fabric of her robes between her fingers. Lucius of the Emperor's Children paced the deck, grinning as he whistled to himself. He tapped a martial beat on the pommel of his sword, and even Hathor Mart, who knew what the swordsman was doing, found it irritating. Circling in opposition to Lucius was Aphogomon, and the irony of its physical disintegration in opposition to his constant renewal was a source of great amusement to Hathor Mart. Alone of the Thousand Suns, he remained unburdened by chronically phlegmatic humours and dark moods, though only he understood the reason why. Tolbeck likely had an inkling, but had said nothing. Hathor Mart's moment of near discovery had come 3 days ago. He had emerged from another hold of captives after purging the burgeoning mutations simmering beneath his skin. He turned to see Tolbeck standing in a weak pool of light a little farther along the corridor. Cold dread seized Hathor Mart's heart at what the adept of the Pyrrhi might say or do. But Tolbeck had simply barged past him, pausing only long enough to glance into the compartment and see the desiccated husks of withered bodies strewn within. Hathelmart waited for a reaction, but Tolbeck said nothing and continued on his way. He had no idea what had brought Tolbeck below the waterline, and had no wish to remind him of their accidental meeting. A mystery, but not one which Hathelmart cared to unravel. Hathelmart ran a hand over his face, surprised to find he was sweating, even in the chill of the bridge. He risked looking up from his position at the surveyor controls to glance at the warrior of the Emperor's children. Lucius still sported the perfect likeness of the Phoenician's face, insult and adoration all in one. He raised a questioning eyebrow, and Hathelmart gave an imperceptible nod in return. The swordsman's grin spread even wider, and his fingers laced around the wire-wrapped grip of his sword. Lucius sauntered over to where Sanact tended to his blades. He reached down and gripped Sanact's wrist.
"It doesn't matter how sharp you make them. You'll never be good enough to beat me," said Lucius.
Sanact's head snapped up, all lethargy and distraction gone in a heartbeat.
"What did you say?"
"I said that I'll beat you however sharp you make them."
"Oh, are you really doing this?" said Sanact. "Here? Now?"
Lucius shrugged.
"Well, I'm bored."
Sanact stood, his legs uncoiling to move him from a seated position to standing without apparent effort. His swords, one of black, one of white, flashed to his sides, quivering with motion.
"Then find some other distraction," warned Sanact,
turning away from Lucius.
"On this ship,"
said Lucius, following Sanact as he moved away.
"There are no other distractions apart from you." "We fought at my tower,"
snapped Sanact.
"Had the battle been to the death, we would both have perished. Is that what you want?"
"Maybe it is," said Lucius. "Maybe I want to see if there's anyone good enough to put me down. I'd hoped it would be you, but I think I was wrong."
Sanact's grip tightened on the hilts of his swords.
"Must you do this now?"
"Why not?"
said Lucius, pressing in close to Sanact, speaking barely an inch from his face.
"Do you think every battle will be fought at your convenience? Is that the only way you could be sure of winning? By having everything just so?
Why are you doing this, really?"
"Because I have to kill you," said Lucius.
"I can't bear to look at you knowing you might be better than me. I need to know. Either I kill you and know I'm better, or you slay me and I won't have to look at your simpering face a moment longer."
"Meet me in the arming halls in 30 minutes, and we will cut to the heart of the matter."
30 minutes?
Said Lucius, shaking his head.
"I'm afraid that won't do. I need to know now."
"Well, then prepare for disappointment," said Sanact.
"Well, that's the one thing I never do,"
said Lucius. Sanact spun and crouched, crossing both swords over his head, as Lucius's blade swung down in an overhand cut. The clash of their blades was deafening in the close confines of the bridge. Camille screamed and hugged the pillar of the lectern as the two blade masters fought in a flurry of lightning-swift blows. Sparks flew from their weapons as they surged back and forth across the deck. Hathelmart watched the dazzling skill on display in awe, their blades moving too fast to follow. The sudden burst of activity galvanized the Thousand Suns like a jolt of electricity to the heart. Tolbeck leapt to his feet with a roar, sparks guttering at his fingertips where once roaring flames would have seethed. Ignis paused in his recitations and focused all of his attention on the combat, assimilating 1,000 new variables into his mystic calculations. Aphagomon moved to stand between Hathelmart and the battling swordsman. Hathelmart moved swiftly. He crossed the deck in 3 strides and stood before the Book of Magnus. His gloved hand trembled as he lifted it towards his Primarch's book. Could he really do this? The enormity of what he was attempting struck him like a blow. This was the life's work of Magnus the Red, the grimoire that contained his every secret, every parable of wisdom. Could he really deface his father's great work? The skin beneath his glove rippled, and the decision was made. With great effort, he lifted his mind into the 4th enumeration and placed his hand firmly on the open book. He gasped, as if he had just plunged it into a vat of lignite. The power contained within the book's limitless pages surged through him. Hathor Mart saw a world ocean stretching out before him, a world of infinite memory and wisdom, a place where nothing was ever forgotten and everything could be known. Hathor Mart angrily blinked away the far distant world and forced his mind back to the present. It would not take long for the duel between Sanact and Lucius to be ended, but he only needed a moment. The words in the Book of Magnus had been inscribed by the remembrancer Mahavastu Callimachus, a mortal scrivener whose hand had been wielded by the Primarch to compile his great work. Hathor Mart felt the vanished man's presence in every etched syllable, formula, incantation, and cursive penstroke. The sounds of the fighting swordsman faded as Hathor Mart poured his Pavoni powers into the book. He felt it resist, for words were stubborn and numbers irrational, but he exerted his will into the ink itself, the pigments of its tallows, its acids and gall. The ink writhed under his touch, fighting him with all the power that had been poured into its creation. Hathor Mart pushed himself into the eighth enumeration, enacting thought forms more suited to combat. Every change he forced into the book restored itself moments later, but he widened his attack, utilizing every arte of the Pavoni to effect change. Powerful wards arose from the heart of the grimoire, deep buried defenses that now recognized the threat Hathor Mart represented. A terrible heat grew beneath Hathor Mart's hand, and his glove blew away in floating cinders. His eyes burned, and he blinked away spots of light and a burning sensation building behind them as a crimson veil fell over his vision. He glanced away, but all attention was on the swordsman. He heard Lucius cry out. Had Sanact actually landed a blow? Beneath him, Camille Shivani looked up, watching what he did. Her face hardened, and she gave him a slow nod of approval at his sabotage. With the last of his powers, Hathor Mart threw a final surge of biomantic energy into the book's ink, his power detonating like a frag grenade in the midst of a lengthy treatise on the mechanics of immaterial transmutation. He pulled his hand from the book, breathless and all but exhausted. The bones in his fingers curdled with motion, and sweat coated his skin like a layer of oil. The bloody hue still veiled his sight, and he wiped his eyes. His hand came away smeared with grit and dust. Hathor Mart looked down at the book. One by one, the changes he had wrought on the page were being undone. Every letter, every number, every alchemical symbol he had changed within the Book of Magnus was reverting back to its original form. All save one. An insignificant portion, an addendum, really, formulae sequences scribbled in a margin as an afterthought, a passage of no real relevance. But Hathor Mart recalled something Amon used to say, and a slow smile spread across his lips. When hammering home the value of attention to detail, the Primarch's equerry had been fond of using the construction of the Pyramid of Fotep as a living allegory. Small perturbations we miss or ignore, tiny flaws we regard as inconsequential, they have far-reaching consequences.
As above, so below, whispered Hathor Mart.
Even now, many hours after his death, blood still flowed from Jambik Sosruko's wounds, as if his mighty heart refused to accept the truth of his death. The Migu's body was covered with a heavy tarpaulin, its form too large to fit in any of the mortuary's corpse compartments. The space was brightly lit, all sterile steel, gleaming porcelain tiles, and humming banks of chirurgical machinery. The wall behind Chaya was lined with polished steel vaults for storing bodies, each one another life ended on the altar of this senseless war. Chaya placed a hand over the Migu's breast, half expecting his wide chest to rise as breath filled his lungs. The mortal wounds inflicted by two wolves were too thorough in the harm they had wreaked for even a warrior as mighty as Jambik Sosruko to survive.
He didn't deserve this, she said,
her breath misting in the chill air of the mortuary.
Well, few of us get what we truly deserve, said Promus, standing across from her with his arms folded.
The towering legionary's armor matched his surroundings, as though he were a harvester of souls for this place of the dead.
Perhaps we should, she said.
for good or ill. Yasunagasena circled the dead body, reciting something in a sing-song tongue she did not understand. He kept one hand on the grip of his sword, the other clasped over his heart.
"What are you doing, Yasu?" asked Promus.
"He gives the beast a warrior's sending," said
Biaki from the far end of the chamber. The rune priest pressed a heavy gold-chased pistol into the neck of a kneeling legionary with a heavy spiked collar around his neck. Coiling tattoos on his fettered arms identified the captive as one of the Thousand Sons, Menkaura. She'd been told his name was Menkaura.
"It all comes down to death, doesn't it?" she said. "No matter how you dress up, what you set out to achieve in the Great Crusade, you cannot change what you are."
"What do you think we are?"
asked Menkaura. Biaki jerked the chain taut, drawing a grunt of pain from Menkaura and blood from his neck.
"You don't talk, unless I tell you to talk, remember?"
said Biaki.
"That was the rule, yeah?"
Menkaura slowly nodded, careful to avoid pricking his neck on the collar. Chaya answered him anyway.
"You are killers. Enders of lives, destroyers."
"We are all only what these dark times have made us, lady," said Promus. "The Warmaster's treachery has upset the natural order of the galaxy, and none of us are on the paths we chose to walk."
Chaya moved around the slab upon which Jambik Sosruko lay and stood defiantly before Promus. Anger darkened her skin, and she felt her fingers curl into fists.
"And what has your war to do with me? Why was I pulled into your fight? What gave you the right to imprison me for years and separate me from the person I love most in the world?"
"This war affects us all," said Promus, "from the Emperor down to the least of his subjects."
"Do you even know why the Warmaster rebels against the Emperor?"
shouted Chaya, slamming her fists against Promus's chest.
"Do you? What grievance does he have that necessitates dragging the entire galaxy down into such terrible bloodshed?"
She hammered her fists against his breastplate until they were bloody. Red handprints smeared the metal, and Chaya sobbed as Promus let her vent her rage and grief upon him.
"I cannot answer you, lady," said Promus. "But before this is over, the Emperor will drag that answer from Horus's heart."
Menkaura laughed, the sound mirthless and despairing.
"They can't answer you, lady," he said. "They can't answer you because they don't know."
Biaki cracked the butt of his pistol against the back of Menkaura's head. The legionary grunted, but bore the pain stoically. He turned his head and sneered at the wolf.
"I told you not to talk," roared Biaki.
"No,"
said Chaya, turning from Promus and cradling her bruised hands.
"I want to hear what he has to say."
Menkaura took a breath to clear his head. He looked up at her, and she saw him recognize the shape and form of her bone structure. She folded her arms across her chest, lest he take her Prosperine origins as a sign of favor.
"Bodvar Biaki can beat me all he wants, but it will not change anything. The Warmaster has aligned himself with the darkest powers of the warp, and a corruption worms its way deeper into his heart with every passing day. None of the Emperor's sons know why Horus Lupercal has turned, and none of them want to know."
Chaya stood before Menkaura and looked him straight in the eye. Once she had counted his legion as the protectors of her homeworld, as warriors to be admired and lauded as much for their wisdom as their skill in war-making.
"Why would they not want to know?" she asked.
"Because they fear what they might learn,"
said Menkaura, turning his gaze on Promus.
"Isn't that what you are afraid of? What you are really afraid of?"
Chaya flinched as Biaki struck the captive warrior again. Blood and teeth flew from the impact. The wolf jammed the barrel of the gun under Menkora's jaw, his finger a hair's breadth from applying the pressure required to fire it.
"Understand this, traitor. You live only because Promus has not seen what I have seen. He was not on Prospero to witness the Maleficarum you and your Primarch unleashed. He does not yet understand how dangerous you are."
Menkaura licked a tongue across his bloodied lips.
"You are right,"
said Menkaure, spitting a mouthful of blood to the tiled floor of the mortuary.
I am dangerous. More dangerous than you can imagine. And yet I am the least warlike of my brothers. So imagine how dangerous my entire legion could have been, standing firm against Horus and shoulder to shoulder with yours.
Chaya saw the murderous anger drain from Biarki. Not entirely, never that, but enough to remove the threat of Menkaure's imminent death.
Would that it could have been so. But that was not the weird, said Biarki. The weird says we are to be enemies. So here you are, with my gun in your face.
I wonder, could it ever have been different? Asked Menkaure.
Some things are not for us to know, said Biarki. Everything is for us to know, said Menkaure.
Yasu Nagasena stepped in close as Biarki's hackles rose. He placed a hand on the plates of his shoulder guard, looking absurdly small next to the wolf.
I do not pretend to understand this weird of yours, Biarki, he said. But does not the fact that Menkaure is here, right now, speak to the fact that we need him?
Biarki shrugged.
Perhaps. He is here, and we will make use of him. That is as much as I know. But weird is not that simple. Do not interpret it in a way that fits the facts you want it to fit.
Nagasena gave Biarki a tight bow before turning back to look at Chaya. His eyes were a warm honey gold and fixed her with a stare of such intensity that it made her take a backward step.
The card Lady Valeda held just before she died, he said. You saw it, yes?
I did, said Chaya.
Clearly?
Only for a second, but yes.
Then describe it to him,
said Nagasena, gesturing towards Menkaure. Chaya nodded and focused her mind, trying to piece together the varied parts of the card, knowing Lady Valeda's legacy depended upon her. The image of the card floated in her mind, and she used the mental training she had learned on Prospero to sharpen its picture.
A divine figure, bearing a fiery sword in his right hand and an eagle-topped globe in his left, said Chaya. Angels fly above the figure, blowing golden trumpets from which hang silk banners.
Menkaure let out a sound that was half sigh and half sob.
Do you recognize this card?
Asked Nagasena, unable to conceal the edge of desperation in his voice. Menkaure nodded, his face downcast.
Yes. What is it? It is the judgment card, said Menkaure.
And Chaya saw Biarki and Promus stiffen in response. Nagasena saw it too.
What does it signify?
He asked.
Ask Promus, said Menkaure. He was there.
Dio?
Promus hesitated before answering. Nykeia,